From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on a big, beautiful map of the world, and on this map there are numbers. Happy numbers for a change. We're not talking about pandemic stuff. We're not talking about numbers of infections and the like. Now, this happens to be a map of the greatest cocktail bars in the world as compiled by the Tales of the Cocktail Foundation. Their Spirit Awards, kind of an industry-wide atlas of what they think are the best in different categories. In the United States, there's a big number over the heart of the country, 530. That's how many cocktail bars have been honored for their contributions, almost one for every member of Congress. They're honored for their recipes, their vibe, their impact on culture. Zoom in by the state, you'll see that there are 83 honorees in California alone, 84 in New York. Let's talk about that for a moment, though. Of the 84 bars honored with an award in New York State, how many do you think are outside of New York City? About zero. None. Not one bar in Rochester. None in Buffalo, Syracuse, Albany, Geneva. Not even the coolest towns in the Hudson Valley have anything worth visiting, according to these international awards. And if I could, let me have a word about that. Culture and trends emanate from the biggest cities, usually. They have more bars by volume if we're going to talk cocktail culture. They've got more talented individuals by volume who can help lead the way. We understand that. But to declare that the entire state is sort of just forgotten or barren, it's not just New York State. You'd be hard-pressed to find one interesting bar anywhere outside of the major metros, according to these awards, across the country. The biggest markets, yes, but what about everybody else? Is that an accurate representation of American cocktail culture, or is it lazy? You get my bias here. Rochester's home to the longest cocktail festival in the state, the Rochester Cocktail Revival. The RCR is back this week. They've got all kinds of events happening. We're going to talk about that this hour. And we're going to discuss whether predicted trends of 2021 have come to pass from various publications, because certainly we know that a year ago, people's drinking habits had changed. You know, a lot of Americans were drinking more, probably some to excess, but some just an evening cocktail to sort of take the edge off in the pandemic. How has that impacted the industry? We're going to talk about that this hour as we talk RCR with the associate producer for the Rochester Cocktail Revival. Leah Stacey is with us.
Hi.
How are you?
Great.
Are you happy to be in the midst of the RCR again?
Yes. I'm thinking about everything I should be doing right now.
Instead of being right here?
I'm going to live in the moment.
I'm not even going to let you think about that. Let's just talk cocktail culture here. Donnie Clutterbuck is the caretaker of cure.
Yo.
Welcome.
Howdy.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And on the line with us is Ralph DiTucci, who is the owner of Cristalino Ice, the co-owner of Bar Mecca. Ralph, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Donnie, what's the most enjoyable or the most in-demand cocktail you're making this summer?
Gin and tonic. 100%. It's the top of the line.
That's new.
Yeah, you're telling me. I couldn't have predicted that a few years ago. There's no way. But it is the number one thing that we serve now.
Are you being facetious when you say you couldn't have predicted that 3 years ago?
Could not have predicted. I don't do predictions, really, but if I had to predict something, it wouldn't have been that. It wouldn't have been that everybody was digging the gin and tonic cure.
What happened? Why is that happening?
Well, we tried to, we redirected our focus from inventing new things to fixing old ones that have already existed and just finding problems within them. So the gin and tonic is colder and more carbonated and served without ice, and like, it's kind of a unique thing. I don't know that it would be the top-selling cocktail at all cocktail bars, but it is the one that we kick out the most.
What are you most drinking this summer?
I mean, it kind of hasn't changed from sparkling rosé in green chartreuse. That's been the theme of the last 10 years for me. You know, that's my beer in a shot. I'm 37. I can do that now.
Sparkling rosé and green chartreuse separately?
Yeah, separately.
Okay,
not together.
Is there something interesting that I've missed?
No.
But like in the same sitting.
Yeah, at the same time, for sure. In two separate glasses.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, this is like a beer in a shot.
It's fantastic.
Sip one, sip the other, sip one, sip the other.
Do you call that anything?
Is that beer in a shot? Or for me, anyway.
Leah Stacey, what's your cocktail of choice this summer?
Oh, man, this is not a good answer because it's been wine. But if I am going to go get a cocktail, I do go usually to visit Donnie and get one of his carbonated cocktails. I really enjoy those. I also had a fabulous cocktail at the opening of the Richmond last week. Was that last week, Ralph?
Last week.
Yeah, so Ralph is part of the team that reopened the Richmond, where Richmond's was on Richmond Street. That's a lot. and I had the American Trilogy, right? And I'm going to let you tell everyone what's in that, because I don't remember.
Well, yeah, sure. It's We're using Rittenhouse Rye. We're using Laird's Applejack and dashes of orange bitters, along with Demerara sugar. So it's a riff on the old fashioned, essentially, that, you know, what we like to represent modern classics, and Tuss, we feel that is one. So.
Love that. And Ralph, what are you drinking this summer?
Oh, boy. Well, I've been drinking through our cocktail menu through R&D for a lot of the summer, but now that we're through the menu, I've been sipping Old Forester 1920. I'm just digging that bottle, and I like it just with a piece of ice.
I happened to be in Geneva last weekend for an event, and I wandered over for the first time in my life, can you believe this, to the Linden on Linden Street, and I had an apricot sour. It was two parts bourbon, one part apricot nectar, half part lemon, quarter honey. And it was delicious, and it was spot on, balanced. I really, really dug it. So that was – so I sort of love to sort of mess around with stuff in the whiskey sour family. So, you know, something a little citrus, something with a simple or something a little sweet, and especially in summer. And that was just so great. And so that – part of the RCR, I think, is allowing the classics to shine, whether it's gin and tonics, with also the creativity to shine. So, Leah Stacey, before we kind of dive in on Rochester's place in this cocktail sort of world here, remind people what RCR is. How many years you've been doing this, and sort of what's on the menu here? We're going to have some fun with that this hour.
Yeah. Rochester Cocktail Revival is New York State's only, as of right now, week-long cocktail festival. Really more of a spirits festival, because we do have some neat pours and things like that going on this week. And we do, in a normal year, quote unquote, we do more than 90 events. So 2019 was kind of we hit our peak. That was year 6. We're now in year 8. We actually did a distilled version last year. And the last 2 years we've done it in September, but before that it was always in May or June. And so this year we have more than 40 events, and we'll do a series of headline events. We have a gala every year, and that is at the Strong on Friday. There are still tickets available. And we usually do a collaboration with the Eastman Museum. It's a garden party this year. It's tonight. Unfortunately, that one is sold out. And then we have a lot of pairing dinners. Kier's doing a lot of pairing dinners. Good luck. We have a lot of free events this year because people really, I think, wanted to do things that gave some flexibility to patrons. You know, we are still very much conscious of the safety and the social distancing to some extent. And every venue, we have more than 20 bars participating. Every venue is following their own COVID-19 protocols for the entire festival. So you can find our entire program online at rochestercocktailrevival.com. Fabulous design courtesy of Justin Doucette. Shout out to the many long hours he's spent on that. We're running through Sunday, and we cap it all off with the Barroom Battle, which is our giant mixology sort of head-to-head competition between a bunch of local bartenders. It's a ton of fun.
What is the coolest event of the week?
Oh, that's hard. I'll probably have a better answer next week after we find out how everything went. I mean, the Barroom Battle is always so fun because it's like the industry's there. A lot of our consumers are there. And it's just there's like this excitement of having the end of this really awesome week. But also it's a celebration. And I think this year, we're trying to bring back that mentality. You know, it's year 8, and we kind of flipped the 8 on its side, and we've been playing off of this RCR forever because it looks like an infinity symbol. and we're having a lot of fun with that. But just this mentality of, like, hey, this is supposed to be fun. Like, you're supposed to come out, have a drink, see your friends, do things that you haven't been able to do in a communal setting for the last couple of years.
Donnie, what event is most interesting to you this week?
We're doing 3 pairing dinners at Cure, and I think that they're all going to be interesting. People keep on asking me which dinner is going to be the one to go to, and I think if there was a one to go to, why would we do the other two at all? It's not being like snotty about that question, but I tried to find, like, for my friends, I was like, which one is going to be the cool one? They're all going to be cool. They're all 5 cocktails, 5 courses. Each category of drink is represented to some degree or another, but each of the dinners incorporates 5 different spirits or 2 to 5 different spirits. So they're all going to be very different, but they're all going to be equally exciting and inspiring. So I don't really have a good answer for that either. I wish I had one that like everyone had to go to, but I don't think there's a one.
Fine. What are you least looking forward to?
My sleep schedule for the week, probably. That's
yeah,
it. The thing that I'm not looking forward to. Doing a double on Sunday, working from 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. is not going to be super fun.
Well.
But, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
You got to do it, man.
I don't want to close Cure because we couldn't, you know. What am I going to do?
No, being in demand, a lot of people would love to be in demand right now.
Well,
it's a good problem to have.
It's a good problem.
It's a good problem to have. Ralph, what are you looking forward to most this week?
There's a bunch of events that I'm really excited for this week. We get to host two, and I'm really honored. We reopened the Richmond and did a historic renovation. And, you know, I wasn't expecting to necessarily be included in RCR, but gratefully we were included. And we're doing an event tomorrow night with Iron Smoke and the Fee Brothers. That should be, you know, pretty crazy one out on our back patio. We're looking forward to that. And then we're doing one with Moet Hennessy on Thursday night. But offsite, I mean, there's so many great events. The gala is going to be amazing. Barroom Battle Royale is always the best part of Battle Royale to me isn't the competition, although that's a great backdrop to be able to see everybody from our community in one space and give each other mutual support for the week that we just threw down. Is an awesome time. There is an event going on at Cub Room that's a rum-focused event where I know they're going to have some amazing stuff to roll out too. So it's tough to pick one. I'm probably going to be making the rounds continuously all week.
Can I just pick one off the schedule that I think is so cool because I'm the geek who loves vermouth and I'll sip straight. There's a vermouth pairing dinner at Lento. Tomorrow?
Oh, yeah.
Is that tomorrow night?
It actually got changed up, so now they're doing a happy hour. Still vermouth, but they're doing happy hour on
Don't
Thursday.
Don't ruin this for me.
So I'm sorry. So, I know you love Lento, but actually, I feel like it's going to be able to include more people now because
so
it
where is,
is
it?
It's still at Lento.
Thursday?
Yeah, Thursday.
Happy hour.
Happy hour. Still vermouth focused. Yeah, they've got a really neat looking menu of cocktails that they came up with for the event.
Okay. Donnie, any problem with vermouth?
Very cool.
Problem with vermouth? Keep it in the fridge. No problem with vermouth unless it's left out like it's wine, because it is wine. Yeah. That's problem number one.
Ralph, are you down with vermouth?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think, amazing tool for any bartender to use, great on its own. But what Donnie said, refrigerate your vermouth or you're doing it wrong.
I think. Can I add a note about vermouth?
Yeah.
Vermouth is one of the only things that has sugar and acid together in the same box. So that is like the one single space mixer that does both things. There are very few of those out there.
There's all kinds of vermouth out there, and if you want to sip it straight, cool. But if you're going to make a really good cocktail with vermouth, for people who are like, what is the big deal with vermouth, Evan? What do you like, Donnie?
Manhattan and martini. People think that a martini is supposed to be just booze chilled in a glass, and it really is supposed to be like a Manhattan is accepted widely as a 2-to-1. Two parts rye, one part sweet vermouth. But the martini has somehow fallen into this like glass of gin category or glass of vodka category. And that's okay. But I just don't think it's the right word for the drink. Doing something like a 3-to-1 or a 5-to-1, you can reduce the amount of vermouth if you're really scared of it. But adding dry vermouth into a martini is what makes it a martini. And that is the one. That is the drink that I would like to, you know.
It was a while ago, and I can't remember all the parts, but there was a friend of mine who's far smarter than me who's going to kill me if I get the parts wrong. But he invented a little drink. He called it the Ides of March. He invented it on March 15th, and it was very reddish. It looked like, you know, like the blood of Caesar. But I think it was cognac, vermouth, like a quarter of grenadine and lemon maybe, something like that. Does that sound like that may work if the proportions are right?
For sure. Yeah, that sounds like there's a drink called, Honey Pot, Gold Rush, something. I think it's a Honey Pot. There's a whiskey sour that in place of some of the sweetener and some of the base spirit, there is sweet vermouth.
Okay.
So I'm messing up the name, I'm sure, but that drink does exist, and that's just with cognac and grenadine instead of whiskey and sugar.
See?
Same drink.
He thought he made something up. He called it the Ides of March. He just ripped it off. That's another part of
the cocktail. There are only like six drinks. There are
six drinks total.
And then Mr. Potato had a different mouth onto it, and now it's a different drink.
I love that.
Yeah.
And you
that's
can
true,
call
though.
It whatever
it's a
you
fact.
Want.
Yeah.
Well, you call it whatever you want. We're talking about the Rochester Cocktail Revival, which runs until when, Leah Stacy?
Until Sunday, September 5th.
And the full schedule is online where?
RochesterCocktailRevival.com.
It was Leah who brought to my attention this map, this ostensible awards map. And, you know, Liz, like, you got to look at this map because it's almost like anything north of New York City doesn't even exist. So I was like, okay.
It's not the first time this has happened. I mean, we're we should be used to it. Yeah, exactly. But,
it was
why?
True across the country. It's like all the, it's like the major metros, which I, again, as I said at the top, I get it. There's a lot of talent in the Manhattans and the LAs and the New Orleans of the world. Mm-hmm. And that's great. That's great. But, but are we just being homers or do we think like, come on, we're not really venturing out very much here. What do you think?
Okay, well, I think we have to be like the champions of our home. You know, we live here. There's reasons that we all chose to live here and to work in this industry. I think that there is more, absolutely, that we could do to venture out in the city. You know, every time I go out and have a drink, I have an opinion because it's me. But I also like, why wouldn't we keep pushing the envelope? So one of the reasons that I suggested that Donnie come on the show is because, yes, we're friends, but also I respect what he's doing. And same thing with Ralph. I think that they both bring this sort of national and even global mindset to the city and to the things that they do here. Donnie with his mad scientist ways. Ralph, I first met through his ice, which... if you have ever gotten a cocktail at a cocktail bar here and you had a piece of ice that was perfectly square and so pure that you could barely see it in your drink, I promise you that Ralph was responsible for that. And I don't think that we hold on to that mindset enough. I think it bleeds into other industries too. I mean, media, we've both worked in media, mm-hmm. and there, I had the same issue there. Like I would notice that we... are just being, it's like if you don't work in New York or you don't work in Chicago or Toronto, like, do you even matter? Do you even exist?
Right, right.
Yeah, and of course we do. And of course people are doing amazing things and local media and local beverage is very, very important.
Can I just say, like, to Leah's parallel, looking at media and the sneering that sometimes happen if you're not in, you know, a top 10 market, on this program, you know, last hour we had guests from Shreveport, Louisiana and San Francisco. And we were talking about walkable and multimodal culture and their places on a list. Shreveport was last in the country and they came on a show in Rochester to talk about being last, which is a tremendously cool thing. I really respect what they did there. They wanted to own it. They want to talk about it. They feel like anywhere they can talk about what they're doing at all is a good chance to plant a billboard and to have a conversation. But San Francisco mm-hmm. is a big market. And they said, of course, we'll come on in Rochester. But sometimes you call places and they don't want to call you back because you're not New York City. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how often people come on this program from other cities and, you know, they'll say, you know, your staff is amazing. You know, the guests were amazing. The audience, the callers, was so thoughtful. They rarely say anything about the host, but they say everything about the show. And they have great experiences because it turns out you can do great things in Rochester. You can do great things in the Finger Lakes. You can do great things anywhere.
Yeah.
It's just a problem if you're creating an awards group and you have a micro focus right on only the big markets. So, Donnie, what do we do about that? I don't think we're just being homers here.
I don't know about that. I have a lot of thoughts on this. I think I wouldn't even say opinions, but thoughts. There is a restaurant in New York where it's New York City. Sorry, look at me. I just called it New York.
See?
Like there's no other New York, right? Like, you know what I'm talking about, but I don't want to be that guy.
I know, yeah.
There's a restaurant in New York City where you're served completely in pitch black, right? So what percentage of the population generally do you think wants to go to a restaurant where you can be served in pitch black darkness?
I do.
0.0001% of the population. And she's sitting next to me. It's Leah Stacey, right? I mean, I would do it too, but I'm saying that that's not like, you're not going to get the suburbs involved in that because, or maybe some of them, but it's not something for the masses. If it's anything slightly outside of the box, the masses don't go for it. And there's a very small portion of the people who we wouldn't consider the masses. Unfortunately, I think the raw number of people who are not, quote unquote, the masses in Rochester is too small of a number to support a really pointed, really progressive, strange bar. So all of the places that are winning these things are in New York City, where the raw number of weirdos is way bigger and the budget's way higher. So I think it's an unfair competition to some degree, and it's not a list that we even need to be included on. I don't value myself as whether or not Cure has been listed on this list. I mean, I guess it'd be cool if it was, but I don't care. I'm still trying to do the best thing I can do for the people around me and make my community, our community, a better place for everyone who inhabits it. And I think that's the point. And if your goal is to get listed, you have your focus on the wrong thing. Maybe it's a cool thing if it also happens. But my goal is just to make sure that whatever comes out of your mouth, like whatever you decide to say that you'd like to drink, I'm going to make sure that's already better. And I don't care who knows it but you.
Yeah.
Because I just want you to be pumped, you know?
Sure.
So not to be like a bummer about lists or something, but I don't think that that's a good thing for us to worry about.
Yeah.
To talk about for sure. Don't get me wrong.
I'm going to get Ralph on this in a second. Let me just follow up on one point that you're raising here. I think when it comes to what makes sort of a great bar or a great bartender or just a great place to get a cocktail, it sometimes is the funky trendsetter experimentation places, which I think Leah and I both know this city is more than capable of being that on any given night. There's a ton of people who could do it. I also take Donnie's point that if you have a limited sort of audience for that, you got to be careful. You got to play the hits. So then the question becomes, can you play the hits as good as anybody? Can you make a great cocktail? Can you meet somebody and talk to them and in 5 minutes go, listen, I'm not going to push what I like on you. I'm listening to what you love. And I'm either going to make exactly what you want and make it better than you've ever had it, or I'm going to get you to try something that I think, based on what you like, you might love.
We can have the conversation.
Yeah, and that is great, too.
Totally.
It's not just the person in the lab creating something brand new, if that makes sense.
And I don't mean that we should recoil and stop trying to progress in any way
possible. Yeah, I get you.
What I'm saying is that we can't have a Flintstone themes bar that only serves neat rum, because they're just you won't be able to pay the bills long enough to continue your innovations. There has to be something, you know, like where like the server is all dressed like 1950s. Like, you can do whatever you want, but if it's going to be off-putting to a majority of the population, it probably won't live long enough to be on a list.
Yeah,
that's a bummer.
Sure, and when you think about lists, which we all focus in the media too much on, and everybody is too much on, and it's very clickable and shareable. In the James Beard world, it ignored upstate New York for a while. Then Lento got a nomination, which was awesome, which was really cool. I think that still may be the only one in Rochester.
It sure is.
Nominated ever is Lento.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is awesome for them. And frankly, it's great for Rochester, and I think Art would tell you that.
Yeah.
But I thought at least that's a recognition of a place that is doing both classic work and pushing to at least be part of something new and different. And I feel like that's where we are. So I'm with you, Donnie. I don't care that we're not on the list, but at least Lee and I can complain that this place is a little myopic. That's all I want. Can you let us complain that they're myopic?
For sure.
That because like everything Donnie said is what makes me want to fight for this region.
Yeah.
And seeing people like Donnie and like Ralph who are committed to their craft and are doing the work and are the true like hospitality of hospitality, that's when I go to New York or I go to any other big city and I come back here and I'm like, we're doing everything just as well and some things better.
Yep.
So I think it's not so much about being listed. I mean, we all know that like a popularity vote is not going to do anything for us. But when it does come to like foundational recognition, I think that we're doing some very cool things that could stand to be recognized.
Yeah, and maybe Ralph, maybe we get too caught up in, would this work in Manhattan? I mean, I've been in coffee bars in Rochester. Rochester has an awesome coffee scene, and we've got, if you love coffee, we've got places that you could literally pick them up and drop them in Manhattan out of the sky, and they would crush it in Manhattan, and they would do wonderfully. And I don't know that that should be the standard. I think to some degree it is inevitable that that conversation happens. Do we get too caught up in that in cocktail, food, wine, et cetera, Ralph?
I just think that you have to think about why you're doing what you're doing, and I think the core reason for a bar to exist is to serve its neighborhood, serve its community. It depends. If the neighborhood needs something to, break outside of the envelope and invigorate that community, I think it can be great. But, I think you have to do basics well. I was fortunate to work in Los Angeles for 19 years with a really large company that was awarded. And, to me, that's not what's important. Why we were awarded was not because we were trying to do things that were spectacular. We were trying to give great hospitality and make people feel special and help solidify their memories. So those things are important, not only in large cities, they're important in mid-size and third scale markets too. That's one of the reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing in Rochester with my Ice House and with Bar Mecca. We wanted to create amenities that would support people who are passionate about that culture You know, when you look on Instagram, when you look on the internet, you can see amazing things that people are doing. The logical question is, why can't we do that stuff? And I think we can. And I'm grateful to so many people in Rochester who value those same things and don't want to force people in our community to have to go to other places to get that kind of service, experience, hospitality. We can foster that for them right here. So the awards are nice, and I think what Leah said is true. To raise visibility is positive, and to improve or increase the overall perception of what we're putting out into the community at our venues. But I think we have tremendous, tremendous venues here in town, and, you know, built on the back of tons of people's hard work. It's amazing to be able to have a bar that is servicing cocktails, not just, you know, not just at the entry level arena, but that can help bridge people from that, you know, beer in a shot type of experience to something more refined, something that they will remember as, this might be the best thing I've ever held in my hand, you know?
Absolutely. And I just asked on social if you want to jump in and tell me what your cocktail, listeners, what's your cocktail of the summer? It's been hot. It's sort of, I'm kind of thinking that the beer in a shot, what do you call it? The
sparkling rosé and green chartreuse.
Sparkling rosé and green chartreuse.
Yeah, the beer in a shot.
A beer in a shot.
Yeah.
That, you know, that may be it for, you know, it's been so
hot.
That's a
heck of a Boilermaker right there.
But you know what? You know what RCR has? This is the best weather week of the year. It is so beautiful right now because we sort of washed out some of that humidity. It's been so, it feels so fresh out there. It feels so good. The Rochester Cocktail Revival is back. And after we take our only break of the hour, we're going to go through more of their schedule of events and contrast that, or at least kind of compare some notes here on what the predicted trends were. I'm curious to know if they get reflected. If they were accurate and they get reflected in the events coming up for the RCR. So Leah Stacey is associate producer for the Rochester Cocktail Revival going on now. Donnie Clutterbuck is caretaker of Cure, and he sleeps there. And Ralph Titucci, owner of Cristalino Ice, co-owner of Bar Mecca. They've got so much going on this week, and we'll get right back to it next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, we're joined by two U.S. military veterans. One who served for more than two decades in the CIA. They discussed their views on U.S. counterterrorism after leaving Afghanistan and as we approach the 20-year anniversary of 9/11. Then in our second hour, metabolic syndrome, a cluster of conditions that can lead to chronic conditions like heart disease. You'll meet doctors and patients. Talk with you Wednesday.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot. And it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
Sometimes I think that we should just keep the camera going, put a camera in here like a Facebook Live and keep the mic going. If Rob Brady just kept the mics going during the breaks, there'd be a lot of people listening. But, you know, I maybe wouldn't last very long. But we're having fun here talking about the Rochester Cocktail Revival with Leah, Donnie, and Ralph. We're going to save the rest of it for after the show.
Yeah.
Okay. Great having you. Thank you guys for being here. We are having fun this week. And what I want to do is I want to contrast some of what wine enthusiasts and their cocktail writers were predicting for trends for 2021. This is back in December. And then maybe talk about if that fits in with anything going on with RCR. Number one, based on the fact that by December of last year, alcohol consumption had gone up, and for some people, a little too much. And so some people were sort of pulling back, but they still loved cocktails. So one of the predictions was more low and no alcohol offerings. So Kara Nielsen, director of food and drink with trend forecaster WGSN, said this was big in 2020, building growth for non-alcoholic offerings well beyond early arrival seed lip to zero proof vermouths, bitters, and more. More people asking for, I don't know if you don't like the term mocktail, but, you know, cocktails with no alcohol, et cetera. Let me start with Donnie. How often are people asking for a creative drink with no alcohol in it?
A little bit more than they used to be, and we have one or two that are on the menu firmly now that we offer regularly, and they are built and executed with the same love and care as the other cocktails are.
When did you put that on the menu?
It's been on the menu for a while, but we really never nailed down a specific one or two offerings that like flew and people dug till probably right after that article was published. So
Middle of the pandemic comes, mm-hmm. and So the demand is there.
Yep.
So I don't know if this is a full-on trend, but at least there's a little bit more entrenched asking for it. So what do you make for people?
We have a lemon, lime, ginger mojito, because really when you drink a cocktail, you're looking for like some sort of burn spice from alcohol or whatever. So there's soda water, carbonic acid's a little bit aggressive. The ginger syrup is a little bit aggressive, and the mint provides a bitter finish. So there's something that's a little sweet, a little tart, a little bit lengthened by soda, and has the sharpness and bitterness that you're looking for when you drink a cocktail.
Do you ever make one of those and find yourself going, you know what, I'm going to make one of these for me. This is really good.
I just, well, we don't have HVAC. I'm not supposed to say this on the air, but like it's not cold in Cure. So I need to replace electrolytes pretty frequently. So I can't be just drinking whatever tastes good. I drink salt water, dead serious.
Wow.
At Cure, yeah. I mean, I'm in the building for a long time.
Yeah,
it's a relatively warm setting. So to be there for a dinner is very easy and wonderful, but to be there as a bartender.
How do you feel about the term mocktail?
Mocktail seems a little demeaning. I don't know. You should, you know, the three of us will have cocktails, and I'll have a mocktail.
So what do you call it?
Just non-alcoholic cocktail. It's called NA cocktail.
NA cocktail.
On our list, yeah.
Okay.
NA ginger mojito, specifically.
Another idea of an NA cocktail?
It depends on what juices you have available. I think that the blood orange soda that we have and the fizz tonic that we carry, I mean, those are NA cocktails. They are flavorful and delicious and pre-made. We're not making them in-house. We don't serve RTD cocktails because the RTD cocktails, like the fermented beverages like Truly's and, you know, White Claws and whatever, because they're just, it's like a vodka soda more or less, and that is a good way to get a vodka soda home to you. But it's not better than we can do in the building. Honestly, a lot of soda companies are doing things we can't do in the building. So the blood orange soda that we carry is great. And it is one of the better non-alcoholic cocktails you can get at Cure.
That's great stuff. Yeah. Leah Stacey, do you ever look for an NA cocktail?
Yeah. I have been finding myself drinking a lot less just because of busyness and not feeling great when it's so hot out if I'm drinking alcohol. So, yeah, I will often ask a bartender for the lowest ABV cocktail on their menu.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I'll have them do like a half cocktail and top it with soda.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that was not my idea first, but it is helpful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stretches the evening a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I also am notorious for just nursing a drink. I think I have that reputation everywhere. Like, it'll take me an hour to 2 hours, depending on what conversation I'm having.
Congrats.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, Donnie's going to hate this, but I love a dirty martini.
Don't get me started.
Yeah, we won't get him started. he will not make one for me.
I will make one.
Oh,
I
you
just
did
like
once.
To talk you into other stuff.
Yeah.
If you can afford
I don't order those at Cure.
You can stand it.
Well, what's wrong with a dirty martini?
Don't do this to me.
I shouldn't
don't
have brought
do this,
this
to
up.
Cure. Okay, fine. You want to hear a really brief summation? The dirty martini was brought to life, from my understanding anyway, because dry vermouth was never kept in the fridge. Over the course of post-prohibition, all the bartenders who knew what they were doing moved somewhere else or didn't exist. Imagine if your field died for 13 years or however long prohibition was. I'm not a historian. So nobody knew what they were doing. Nobody knew vermouth was wine. They still don't. They don't keep it in the fridge. And what is the closest thing to you that can replace vermouth when you have a fruit tray in front of you at a bar, which contains lemons, limes, cherries, and olives? Well, it's not the cherry juice, right? And certainly not lemons and limes. That's not vermouthish. But the olive brine is totally shelf-stable. It has some sort of salinity to it, and it can be a cocktail mixer. So you dump that in with the booze, and now you have a martini that tastes better than one with spoiled dry vermouth, right? So the dirty martini has come into play because it was the best of a bad situation. But we're no longer in the bad situation, so I have a
Leah,
personal
problem with
it.
We've come so far. You don't have to
and
do that
everybody
anymore.
Everybody who orders a dry martini, I'm like, or a dirty martini, I say, you must just be hungry. Because you want salt.
Maybe so I need electrolytes.
Salt, we have food. And then I can make you an actual martini. I have stopped having this conversation altogether, and I just do what I'm told. Cool? Unless someone seems interested, they're sitting at the bar, they seem like they really don't know what they're wanting, and they're grasping it like whatever they know how to say. And I'm like, well, if this is what you get everywhere else, can I make you one of these, and I'll dump it and make you a dirty if you don't dig? You take one sip, you don't love it, I'll dump it. I don't care. It's not about me. It's about you. But I need you to know that this other thing exists. I do that for 1 out of 100 requests for a dirty martini, and it's only when I really feel like people want that.
What if somebody says to you, listen, dude, I know the history, and I love a dirty martini.
I'll make it. Okay. Happily.
The whole point
is to make people happy. And
that's
if
actually
you need
Leah.
Some salt, also, I'll usually be like, Leah, why don't I get you a charcuterie board and you can have a real drink?
Leah wants a dirty martini in pitch black setting.
When was the last time you've eaten? Are you hungry?
Sounds fun.
Ralph, what about you? What about NA cocktails?
Well, yeah, I'd say that that's been an emerging trend for nearly a decade now. I can remember in 2013 and 14 is when I first started seeing them kind of make an emergence. And now there are products to service that, like Seedlip, like you mentioned, and a number of others. So at Bar Mecca, we end up using a lot or selling a lot of Seedlip. At the Richmond, we have a non-alcoholic cocktail menu, and I love it. I think it's really cool to offer people fun, interesting alternatives to just soda or juice and or coffee. And I think that, you know, most of us want to have a memorable experience when we go out. What's memorable about, you know, the 1,000th Coca-Cola I've drank in my life? But this combination of things that was designed specifically for me to enjoy, that could potentially be cool and memorable. So we do include them, and I see that trend only growing.
Anything on the cocktail revival list for people who are not drinkers but want to experience the festivities, Leah Stacey?
We always have those options.
Yeah.
Every event will have those options.
Every event. The website, by the way, if you want to check out the full schedule.
RochesterCocktailRevival.com.
Number two on the trend list for this prediction back in December, cocktails to go are here to stay. They write, between the meteoric rise of canned cocktails and relaxed regulations that allow bars in many states to sell alcoholic drinks to take home, expect this trend to continue strong in the coming year. I kept hearing the New York State was going to stop allowing the to-go, did it stop? When did that finally stop?
About a month and a half ago, 2 months ago.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It
wasn't that long ago.
I think it just lapsed.
And wasn't reinstituted. So the law wasn't written to be permanent, unfortunately.
Yeah. Ralph, is that a bummer or is that a logical shift back to the status quo?
I think that obviously it was a great service and amenity during, COVID era operations for a lot of people. To me, I think that's one of the ones that ought to stay and be an innovation that we hold on to. I mean, we didn't have massive negative effects of including that option for people at home. And, there are complaints about who are winners and losers in the way that that law was written. I think that in general, everybody came out in a better place from having that available. So anytime we can keep people from drinking and driving, I think it's great. I just think there's too many pros and not enough cons for me to not support it, you know.
So what's going to move it? Is this even on the legislative radar to re-up at any point now? Donnie, you're shaking your head. You think it's toast?
I don't know that I think it's toast. I think that if it takes, you know, whatever process marijuana is going through right now, mm-hmm. that is taking far longer than anything ever should in the mm-hmm. digital age when everything moves quickly and I can do things faster. Governments seem not to be able to, or not to want to, or something like that. I would love if cocktails to go stuck around, because if you can take a cocktail home and drink it there, you don't have to drink them here and then drive home or do whatever you do after your judgment is impaired. Mm-hmm. I'm not promoting that people should or do that, but I can't imagine that they would do less of it if they had to drink the drinks at the bar and then find a way home in a city that's almost impossible to find secondary transportation. It is a silly thing not to reinstitute.
I think you definitely kind of put your finger on something else, is that Rochester was one of the last of the game when it comes to rideshare, like Uber, Lyft, et cetera. I just think, the safer we can make the community by providing more amenities for nightlife, I think those are all good decisions.
Amen.
All right. One of the other predicted trends, and I don't know if they nailed this one. Will this finally be rum's year? It says each year, industry pros guess every year that rum is about to finally have its moment in the United States. It's become something of an inside joke, but 2021 might actually be the breakthrough as producers reach out to younger consumers. Donnie?
Bourbon is listed as straight bourbon, and there are a lot of rules to making bourbon. Tequila, quite the same, tons of rules. There is a governing body that governs that. Rum, there is not. Rum is too squirrely. It's either full of sugar and caramel coloring, or it's not. The average consumer has absolutely no way of figuring this out. And most of the ones that are made without all of the goofy additives are off-putting to the common palate. I don't know that rum will ever have, quote-unquote, its day. I hope it does, because rum is like wine. There can be really, really great stuff, and there can be really bad stuff, and it really does take a bit of an educated eye to find them. But people can lean on bartenders and stores to do that, and wine has been popular, rum has been popular forever. But I don't know if it's ever going to be, like, the thing.
Okay, I'll get Ralph in a second, but mm-hmm. if I'm going to a store tonight, and I'm going to grab a rum that is Donnie Clutterbuck approved. What is it?
Anything of the agricole side of things. The French Islands have a governing body that not legislate. They like control the production of rum in much the same way that cognac and Armagnac are controlled. So they have VS, VSOP, XO, and other designations of like when it says 5 years on it, it means that the minimum age of anything that's gone into that blend is actually 5 years. It doesn't mean just five is the number we put on the bottle because now it says five on it, you know? And then it's like dark black, which nothing can come out of a barrel dark black. You know what I mean? So I say anything from the islands, like Clément or Rum JM, those are safe bets. But there are so many other single distillery, single barrel, one-off things that are very interesting. I don't know if you'll like them. So I mean, that's subjective. But Rum JM and Clément are pretty safe bets.
All right, Ralph. Do we have any hope of a breakthrough for rum?
Yeah, I think that the observation that rum is always supposed to be on the precipice and never quite gets over the top is fair. But, you know, I do see growing enthusiasm for rum. Even here in Rochester, there's a group of people who avidly follow rum and refer to Rochester as Rumchester and get together for rum meetings and have trades. So I think that there's enthusiasm around it. And as the category, what Donnie said is true. There's been, you know, not great representation from the major labels in terms of what is great rum to give people. And that was also true in the agave spirits for a long time. But in the same way that as people have gotten more granular about finding out who's making great agave spirits and supporting ethical people, I think that's happening for rum right now too as well. But I don't think this is the year for rum. I think rum is probably still 2 or 3 years away if it comes.
So one more point on rum here. I should tell you, asking on social what people are drinking this summer, the first response was, this summer it's been dirty martinis. That's from Rich.
Was it somebody who knows me and is just saying that?
That's from Rich. It's a first response, Donnie Clutterbuck, and it wasn't even Leah Stacey.
Can I add something?
I didn't even ask someone to tweet that.
That's the only drink that naturally has a bunch of salt in it, and you're probably sweating in the summer. You're probably low on electrolytes. That's the Gatorade of cocktails.
Don't justify this.
I'm just saying, that makes sense.
Oh, my God.
It makes sense.
What I
love Gatorade.
Is it dirty gin or dirty vodka? That's what I want to know.
Oh,
I'm going to assume
that
vodka because that's the usual.
I go gin.
I'm not saying you're the usual, Rich.
All right, Misty says vodka and lemonade.
Oh, that's a good move.
Here's another says Captain 100 Proof and Coke.
Nope.
It's a college student.
Kay says Campari and soda. Now, this I like. Percy says the summer of Caipirinha. No, Donnie?
I'm a data inclined person, and the Caipirinha with the muddled fruit makes me nervous because every lime is very different.
Hold on. Now, this is going to be educational. This is going to be an education because I've only loved Caipirinha, but I'm a sucker for a lot of lime and, you know, something, especially on a hot summer day. I think it's great. What you're saying is there's variability drink to drink with that? Why? What's going on?
The thing that makes me twitchy about it's twofold, I suppose. One, when you cut a lime in half, quarter it, and smush it, there is a variable amount of juice that will come out of each lime because each lime is a different size, a different acidity, but potentially, you know, like the mild variation. So building a cocktail around that, I don't know how much sugar to use. How much sugar is appropriate for whatever lime? Whether you can't, because when you don't know what X is, you can't figure out what Y is, right? So there's a variability there that I don't like.
I got to stop you because I want to make sure I'm understanding, and I think the audience might be going, wait, what is a Caipirinha? So let's back it up a little. Tell us
cachaça. So cachaça is basically rum, and it's basically very, very government-controlled rum, where it's made from sugar cane sap instead of the molasses that most industrial rum is produced from. So if you see a clear rum out there that doesn't have a lot of character, it's probably distilled from molasses, which is a byproduct of sugar production. This cane sap is not ever turned into sugar. It is just fermented, much like agave. It's just crushed and fermented to make this really grassy, high salinity, delicious, funky white rum called cachaça. So a Caipirinha is that plus a smushed lime or half lime or whatever you smush into it. Some sugar.
I've seen like lime and a half, but every lime is a different size.
Lime and a half can be lime and a half.
But it's not like ounce and a half or like 3 ounces or 2 ounces.
Right. And that's my
people always say like it's a lime and a half. And I'm going, okay.
Yeah.
That's
like saying a cup of sugar. What's the granulation on the sugar? Like how much sugar is actually in that cup?
Okay, so your point is it would be easier to make this if the component, if if the proportion of lime was not just like a lime and a half.
I have a really innovative thought here. If you squeeze the juice out of a lot of limes, you can measure how much juice you're putting into something.
Wow.
I know that's a really far. It's a big stretch for some people.
So is that like selling? If you're making a caipirinha and you measure it, are you like a sellout?
I don't know if you're a sellout. I warn people when they order them. I'm like, listen, I don't know how to do this well. Everything you have here.
You
is going
say
to be,
that if people say, can you make me one? You'll say, I can do it. You don't know if it'll be good.
I don't think they're as stellar as some of the other things that we've really dialed in and can make exactly the same every time
but
on purpose.
But that's different to me than a Manhattan. A caipirinha doesn't have to be perfect. It has to be limey and refreshing.
Well, I can make it exactly as limey and refreshing every time if you know what's in it.
If you know the proportions.
Yeah, and I don't usually. I also don't like drinks that have food in them.
Okay.
I don't like things that have things
going back
in them.
To.
But hold on.
That's the two. But
lime, so it's got lots of lime, it's got cachaça, and then what else?
Sugar.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's usually smushed all together, ice is put in the shaker, it's shaken and then served dirty, which means this is not the dirty martini. It means the whole shaker is dumped into the glass where the food and the ice is all in.
Yeah, we don't
it.
Need that.
Well, I mean, that's what people do. So if you're really going to do it, that's how you make a caipirinha.
We
right?
don't need that.
You're literally describing every cocktail in the 90s. Just
yeah, that's right. They were all so pretty. Everything was shaken and just dumped. So in the case of if we were to make it a cure, I'd make it like a daiquiri. And then I'd probably spray, we have lime oil macerations in atomizers. So I'd probably spray a bunch of lime oil in. Because the one thing that you're not getting if you juice and then mix a caipirinha without the whole lime in it, you're not getting oil from the peel. But we have the peel oil isolated, so I can spray that into the shaker, shake it, and serve it properly, and make exactly the same drink every time. I think that's important, but I haven't dialed that one in yet. So, you know,
Ralph, Leah, what do you think? Leah, are you a caipirinha fan?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. Well, everybody's
is it because it's a different drink every time?
Right.
No.
It's just not
it's because you like dirty martinis.
It's not my palate.
Everybody's got a right to be wrong.
Oh. Yeah.
Everybody has a right to be
wrong. We'll all fight about this later.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not fighting with anybody.
Ralph, caipirinha, yes, no?
I'm good with caipirinha. I like funky cachaça. And to me, you know, certain cocktails I feel like got to be played for perfection and that the balance has to be perfect and all the rest. But sometimes it's like a song. You know, who cares how well or badly you sing Happy Birthday? It's for the event. It's for the moment that you're in. I'll take a caipirinha at the pool or on the beach. Sure thing. Bring it over.
I actually think that's a perfect description
of
it.
That
is, it's 88 and humid.
Ralph,
you're not going to be overly picky.
Ralph and I fundamentally agree on everything. And in the details, we have exactly the opposite opinions. And I'm so glad that we're both here talking about exactly
these
things.
I know, it's great. It's great. Though I appreciate the artistry of Donnie saying, I want to be able to recreate this for you the next time you come in. And I'm going to have a hard time doing that with a caipirinha.
Yeah.
So I get that. Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
On your event list on Thursday, there is a night in the French Quarter. And on the trends list from Wine Enthusiasts, going back to last December, spirits to watch besides rum, which we've now exhausted, tequila, cognac, and whiskey, particularly Irish. They write, after a resilient year for spirits in 2020, the outlook for 2021 remains upbeat. They expect agave-based spirits, tequila, mezcal, to continue to grow, along with cognac and whiskeys, with the exception of blended scotch. All right, let me start with Ralph on this. What about those?
Oh, wow. It's awesome that they talked about, they singled out blended scotch as something that they don't see growing. That's generally speaking the world's largest category. So it's interesting that they put their finger on that. But I agree. I think people are more into specific distillates now. I mean, single malt scotch and Japanese whiskey and American whiskey, certainly. I guess I see where they're coming from. The blended scotch is not where it's at right now. I think agave continues to just be a juggernaut and continues to grow. And, you know, I think that's when everybody needs to be careful about what agave spirits they're purchasing. And again, like I said, how ethical the practices of the people that you're supporting are so that you know where your dollars are going.
Yeah, that was actually another one on the trend list was more attention to ethical practices in the industry itself,
yeah.
Which it does sound to me. And Donnie, you're nodding at that one. That's a happily, I think that's one that people are paying more attention to as time goes on. What about those spirits that were mentioned there? Cognac, tequila, whiskey, et cetera.
And what was the base of that question again? I'm sorry. I was
Spirits to watch here. I mean, are we seeing, you know, is cognac having a strong year? Is tequila, is whiskey, apart from
is
Glenn.
Is tequila ever not having a strong year?
I mean, tequila is tough to dethrone there. It's like the new flavorful vodka, you know? Like, it's easy. Right, you know what you're getting into, even regardless of the brand, to some degree. Where, like, rum, like I said, is really squirrely, and bourbon has a lot of phenols in it. It's all aged, right? Like, it's all aged in a barrel for between 2,000 to 7,000 years or whatever. So there are tannins in it. There are things that make it not only interesting, but off-putting to some people. Tequila, no matter how long, I mean, if you age a Reposado or an Añejo, you're not going over 3 years. And they're in used barrels, so they're not pulling a whole bunch of tannin out. There's not a lot of off-putting features. Most aged tequilas just taste like cinnamon raisin bread or something of the sort. It's like vanilla, caramel, cinnamon raisin, stuff like that. And who doesn't like that? So I don't think that there's a lot to be off-put by there. But again, practices, this is not a super renewable crop. Agave piñas take like six to 8 years to come to full maturity. And if you're just reaping them constantly and there's no crop rotation because you have to put out a lot of tequila, it's not necessarily the best thing, not just for the category, but for the earth. So,
well, in our last minute or so, I mean, just looking at ones on that list, you can get plenty of cognac at Locals Only, 6 p.m. on Thursday night, a night in the French Quarter. That's one of the events. And if we're missing any, Leah Stacey, now's your time to fill people in.
Well, I think in keeping with this question, or this topic, rather, we have an agave seminar on Saturday at Good Luck at 11 a.m. with Robert Simonson, who has been a frequent flyer with us. We love having him come and speak.
It's huge.
Yeah, he loves Rochester, which we
yeah,
love
he
that.
He knows Rochester.
He does, and he's coming to talk about his new book, and we've partnered with Writers and Books, actually. They'll have the book there, so you can buy it and then have Robert sign it. And there is a mezcal cocktail from Good Luck featured in the book, which is really exciting.
So Saturday morning, 11 a.m.?
Yep. And there will be tickets available at the door for that one, too.
Okay. Yep. Anything else stand out? Because we're down to our last 20 seconds, Leah Stacey.
I would say if people want to get dressed up and come out to something, they should come to our gala at the Strong. You're going to get to dress up and have full run of the museum without your kids, you know, if you do that sort of thing.
I do that anyway.
Love that. Come do it again.
When is it?
It's on Friday. Yep. Tickets Friday are available on our Eventbrite and through our website.
And the website again?
RochesterCocktailRevival.com. And we are posting a lot on social media, so you can follow us on Instagram, same handle.
All three of these folks and they and their colleagues are very, very busy, and we are grateful for the time. Leah Stacey, associate producer of the RCR, the Rochester Cocktail Revival, in full swing now. Have a great, great time with it.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having us.
Donnie Clutterbuck, always great to see you, the caretaker over at Cure.
Thank you.
He'll even make you a dirty martini. He might try to talk you out of it. Ralph Tatucci, Cristalino Ice, co-owner of Bar Mecca, among many other ventures. Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And Rob Braden, Megan Mack, Emery Stein, Evan Dawson saying thanks. Talk to you tomorrow.